Crossfield Park, Jane Austen's classic story published in 1814. Henry Crawford is determined to win Fanny's heart and hand.
Edmund Bertram has gone to Peterborough to be ordained, and Fanny misses him deeply. But Mary Crawford is more devastated than even she had thought possible.
I must be getting back to the parsonage, Miss Price, but I had it in mind to ask you. Are you not surprised at your cousin Edmund staying away so long?
I do not know, Miss Crawford. Perhaps I had not expected it.
I cannot help being rather concerned at not seeing him again before I leave Mansfield for London. I should like to have seen him again, I confess. But you must give my compliments to him.
There was a letter.
A letter? Does he give an account of what delays him?
It was to my uncle. I believe it was very short.
There are three sisters in the house where he resides, I believe.
The Miss Owens.
And are they musical? I am sure they are. And perhaps beautiful. There is beauty in every family. It is to be expected.
I have never met them.
Suppose you were to have one of the Miss Owens settle hereabouts. How should you like it?
I cannot say.
I dare say they are trying for it. It is everybody's duty to do as well for themselves as they can. The father is a clergyman, and the brother is a clergyman. They are all clergymen together. You don't speak, Miss Price.
I do not know what to say.
But honestly, do you not think I am correct in my suspicion?
No, I do not. I am quite sure that Edmund has simply been delayed.
Mary Crawford walks home in better spirits to find her brother unexpectedly in the drawing room.
Henry.
You are just returned from Mansfield Park, I think.
Indeed. I have been visiting Miss Price.
Inquiring as to what delays her cousin?
Enjoying a little conversation, certainly. She is delightful company.
What I am about to say, it will astonish you.
I am not easily astonished, Henry.
My mind is entirely made up. I am determined to marry Fanny Price.
Marry?
You know with what idle designs I began, but this is the end of them. I have made no inconsiderable progress in her affections, and my own feelings are entirely fixed.
But what a match for her. Oh, I approve your choice with all my soul. You will have a sweet wife. What an extraordinary match for her.
Mary, I cannot be certain. I do not think I shall ask in vain.
I do not think she would marry you without love. If there is a girl in the world capable of being uninfluenced by ambition, I know it is her. But ask her to love you, and she will never have the heart to refuse.
I will make her happy, Mary. Happier than she has ever been in her life.
But what will Mrs. Rushworth and Julia say? You have made them both very much in love with you, and now it is their poor cousin you have chosen to marry.
I care neither what they say nor what they feel. They will now see the sort of woman that can attach me, and I wish the discovery may do them good. And they will see their cousin treated as she ought to be, and I wish that they may be heartily ashamed of their own neglect and unkindness. Her condition remains as it always has been, dependent, helpless, friendless, and forgotten.
Her cousin Edmund never forgets her.
True. But what can he do for her happiness and dignity in the world to what I shall do?
The next morning, Henry Crawford presents himself in the drawing room of Mansfield Park.
Miss Price.
Mr. Crawford, you are returned.
I am, and I bring good news. Your brother William is a lieutenant. Here are the letters which announce it.
Fanny cannot speak. But he does not want her to speak. To see the expression in her eyes, the change in her complexion is enough.
My own happiness is, I think, as great as yours. Second Lieutenant William Price of Her Majesty's Sloop Thrush.
Has this been all you're doing, then? How very, very kind. Mr. Crawford, we are infinitely obliged to you.
He takes her hand and leads her back to her seat.
Miss Price, there is so much I have to tell you. Indeed, I am happy for your brother, for I know you love him with all the deep affection of your fine heart. But my heart, too, is full to overflowing with sensations I have never felt, never thought I would feel in my whole life.
Mr. Crawford, I do not understand
you. I barely understand myself, Miss Price, and I'm delighted to be caught off guard by such a truly wonderful revelation.
Of course, I am very grateful for your helping William.
It was you I wanted to please.
Me?
Everything I have done for William is on account of my deep attachment for you.
Mr. Crawford, please.
I cannot help myself. I must tell you how I feel.
I must leave you.
If you could but consider the possibility of loving me in the future. I can be patient. I know you would never marry without love.
Marry?
But I will become a man who deserves your love if you will but give me the time to do it.
Mr. Crawford, I cannot know how this has happened. I am overwhelmed with everything you have given William, but...
I want you to be my wife. There. I am as surprised as you are, for I have never imagined being married to any woman, but you have changed me, Miss Price. I want as much to be your husband, your champion, your protector, as I have ever desired anything in the whole of my life, and I promise you with all my heart that if you but put your faith in me and join your destiny to mine, I shall not fail you.
No, no, you cannot think of me like this. You must not. Please, I beg you, Mr. Crawford, this must stop.
The rest of the day, Fanny spends alone in her room, deeply unsettled by Henry Crawford's proposal. When she goes down to dinner, she is startled to discover, however, that Henry has been invited to join them.
Well, I hear we have much to thank you for, Mr. Crawford.
It was nothing, Sir Thomas.
William, a lieutenant. And what is the name of his ship again, Fanny?
The Thrush.
Well, you've done us a great service, my dear Crawford. Is that not so, Fanny?
Yes, indeed.
I beg you, sir, it was a pleasure, as it should always be to be of assistance to any person whom Miss Price holds dear.
Is it not extraordinary how much young people cost their friends? What with bringing them up and putting them out in the world?
I know William to be very grateful, Aunt Norris.
I was happy to be able to give William something not inconsiderable when he departed, because such a gesture is not always possible for a widow such as myself with limited means.
I am glad you gave him something not inconsiderable, sister, for I gave him £10.
Upon my word, he must have gone off with his pockets well lined.
On Henry Crawford's arrival, he had presented Fanny with a note from Mary.
My dear Fanny, for so I may now call you, I cannot let my brother go without sending you a few lines of general congratulation. Go on, my dear Fanny, and without fear. There can be no difficulties worth naming. I chose to suppose that the assurance of my consent will be something, so you may smile upon him with your sweetest smiles this afternoon, and send him back to me even happier than he goes. Yours affectionately, Mary.
I know my sister hopes for a reply to her note, Miss Price.
Yes, I will write directly. I am very much obliged to you, my dear Miss Crawford, for your kind congratulations. But I hope you will excuse me when I ask you to take no further notice of your brother's offer of marriage. It would be a great favour if you would never mention the subject again. With thanks for the honour of your note, I remain, dear Miss Crawford, Fanny Price.
The next morning, when Fanny awakes, she is astonished to see Henry Crawford coming yet again to the house, and at an hour as early as the previous day. Nearly half an hour passes before her uncle appears in her doorway.
Ah, Fanny. Have you no fire today?
I am not cold, sir.
But you have a fire in general.
No, sir.
I know that your Aunt Norris has always been a great believer in young people being brought up without indulgences, but there should be moderation in everything. The principle in itself is good, but in your case I believe it to have been carried too far. I think too well of you, Fanny, to suppose you will ever harbour resentment on that account. Your elders saw themselves as preparing you for that mediocrity of condition which seemed to be your lot. Now, you may not be aware that I had a visitor this morning. Mr. Crawford wishes for you to be his wife. I am truly happy for you, Fanny. It's a good match. He's ambitious and harbours for you, I think, a genuine affection. I know that you would wish to hear my approval from my own lips. He's waiting downstairs, Fanny. He's in my room, hoping to see you there.
I cannot go down to him. I told him everything yesterday. I told him without disguise that it was very disagreeable to me and quite out of my power to return his good opinion.
Out of your power to return his good opinion? What is this? I know he spoke to you yesterday, and as I understand it, he received as much encouragement to proceed as any a well-judging young woman could permit herself to give.
You are mistaken, sir. How could Mr. Crawford say such a thing? I gave him no encouragement yesterday.
Am I to understand that you mean to refuse Mr. Crawford?
Yes, sir.
Refuse him?
Yes.
For what reason?
I cannot like him, sir, well enough to marry him.
This is beyond my comprehension. Here is a young man with everything to recommend him, a situation in life, a fortune, and agreeable in every way. You have known him for some time, and his sister is your intimate friend. He has served your brother William with great generosity of heart.
It is true.
His feelings cannot have taken you by surprise. I have never observed Mr. Crawford being unpleasant to you.
Indeed not.
Then I must be inclined to think that you do not know your own feelings on the subject.
Yes, sir, I do.
Have you any reason to think ill of Mr. Crawford's temper?
Fanny's heart sinks. Her ill opinion of Henry Crawford is founded on observations which, for her cousin's sake, she dare not mention to her uncle. She cannot speak of Mr. Crawford's misconduct towards Maria and Julia.
Well, I thought you free from wilfulness of temper, self-conceit, and every tendency to that independence of spirit which prevails so much in modern days, even in young women, and which, in a young woman, is offensive and disgusting beyond all common offence.
Uncle, please.
You have shown me that you are wilful and perverse. Think how your brothers and sisters might benefit from such a marriage. But no, no, no. You think only of yourself.
I beg you, please, sir. Try to understand.
I understand very well, Fanny. In a wild fit of folly, you are throwing away an opportunity of being settled in life, eligibly, honourably, and nobly, as will probably never happen to you again. Here is a man of sense, character, manner, and fortune exceedingly attached to you. And let me tell you, Fanny, that you may live 18 years longer in the world without being addressed by a man of half Mr. Crawford's estate or a tenth of his merits.
I cannot help it. Uncle, if it were possible for me to do otherwise, I am so perfectly convinced that I could never make him happy and that I should be miserable myself.
I see. All is said, then. I understand you quite well.
Edmund. Edmund, please come home. What am I to do?
Poor Fanny is more alone than she has ever been. The past, the present, the future all seem terrible to her. She has no one to take her part. No one to speak for her. Edmund is far away, and his mind is occupied with Mary Crawford, the woman he longs to marry.
In episode 7 of Mansfield Park, Jane Austen was played by Amanda Root, Fanny Price by Felicity Jones, Mrs. Norris, Julia McKenzie, Mary Crawford, Susan Lynch, and Henry Crawford, James Callis. It was dramatised by Lynn Coughlin and directed by Sally Avens.